Hello, everybody. It's me, Will Menaker, here with your Chapo, and I'm kicking things off this week with a very special guest. This is a big get. It's the newly reelected governor of New York State, Andrew Cuomo. Andrew, how are you doing?
That's right. It's Andrew M. Cuomo. I'm newly reelected to the standard three terms that a successful governor of New York gets above and beyond the protestations of losers like you guys.
Well, you know, I mean, I voted for the other guy, in this case, the other girl, but Mr. Cuomo,
I know who I'm talking to. Let's not make any mistakes. I'm doing you a favor by coming on to set the record straight.
Well, yeah.
You, DSA, Occupy Wall Street, Bernie Bro, Cynthia Nixon Bro scumbags have tried to malign the record of me and my family when we're the ones getting the job done. And I hope that you're sucking on your 20% that you won in that last primary election.
Really spiking the football. But Governor Cuomo, you've got cause to celebrate. You've brought Amazon's new headquarters right here to New York City, to the borough of Queens.
Amazon is flying in. We're having a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Mr. Bezos is going to join us. We're flying the campus in with a series of quadcopters that are also purchased from Amazon.com as part of the deal. We're very happy. Everything in the ribbon cutting, down to the ribbon and the scissors, is going to be bought on Amazon.com. We are bringing billions and billions of jobs to Amazon.com, which is now headquartered in New York City, thanks to Governor Cuomo.
Governor Cuomo, what are some of the features that this amazing state-of-the-art headquarter facility will feature?
Well, yeah, it's nice of you to ask. All you guys have been ganging up trying to say, oh, we're giving $1 billion to Amazon, this and that. Let me tell you how it works. When you get things done in this city, what you do is you sit down to Mr. Bezos face to face and you say, what do you want? And he gives you a list. Look, Long Island City is a neighborhood ripe for reinvestment. Let's put it that way. I got drunk and I went on Amazon.com and I started clicking around like anybody does when they feel like making an impulse purchase for the holidays. And I clicked on, hey, how about reinvesting in an entire neighborhood in a major city? What do you know? It was available on Amazon.com. That's why they're winners. That's why I play with winners. And I clicked on it, and they got a bunch of options. Hey, what do you want? What kind of neighborhood? A warehouse neighborhood, an upscale neighborhood, a downscale? You click drop-down menu, Long Island City, bam. They're delivering an Amazon headquarters next year, very soon.
Outside, I mean, everyone knows about the tax breaks, but what are some of the other perks that you offered Mr. Bezos to attract him and Amazon here to New York State?
Well, whatever he wanted. Look, people have complained about the transit situation in New York City. I railroaded over those people, and Mr. Bezos sat down, and what do you know? He offers a solution. I offer him a couple of things. We fixed it. We're going to have a separate Amazon train that runs from their campus parallel to the 7 train, and we're not even going to build tracks for it. It's going to be drone powered, and it's going to plow its way down Jackson Avenue straight through Long Island City, and then it's going to plow through the water across the river into Manhattan. Anybody in the way is getting bowled over. Cuomo and Amazon, that's a team you got to get out of the way for. If you think it's not going to work, I suggest you look at the duck tours that they do in Seattle and several other successful capital cities.
So an amphibious hydroplane Amazon train will be barreling across the East River.
Yeah, they say complaints. They look, these people, you vegan socialist complaining fucks heckling me about the 7 train, this and that. Guess what? We're going to make the 7 train harder to take and we're going to force you onto an Amazon.com Philip K. Dick system of police police contracted Amazon drones that'll be plowing their way above, below, and on the streets of Long Island City. Guess what's happening to the 7 train? I'm going to make the wait longer on the 7 train just to teach you fucks a lesson. And anybody who endorsed me in the last primary is going to be able to board the train fast.
But Governor Cuomo, don't you think there are some legitimate objections to the people of Queens and the city about how this process was handled?
Look, I suggest that any of you Rosa Luxemburg fucking losers, I want you to sit down and listen to how the game is played. Go to one of your record stores before they're gentrified out of the neighborhood and go buy yourself a Pink Floyd album on vinyl. And go listen to a little track I like to play loud. Welcome to the Machine. And to me, it's a celebration and affirmation of everything that my father, Mario Cuomo, did for this state and this city. Welcome, my son. Welcome to the Machine. I'm going to do a cover song.
Wow, I didn't know that song was about New York State Democratic politics.
I made it about me, and I've got my own. Look, I'm putting out a Weird Al Yankovic cover up.
Governor Cuomo, do you think New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio deserves any credit for this this huge win?
De Blasio deserves the credit that the little Muppet monster chained to Jabba the Hutt gets for helping out, putting Harrison Ford in carbonite. Sure, he was there. He was applauding. He was jumping up and down going, "Yes, Mr. Governor, sir," and all that. Look, he did his job. The mayor of New York serves the governor of New York. That's the feudal system. I don't know if you caught up. I say jump. He says how high, and I slap him in his face.
Now, we all know New York City, you know, it's one of the greatest city in the world. People come from all over for our pizza, our bagels, you know, the
Yankees.
And
there's been a big gap. People aren't coming to Long Island City. It's a waste of space. They got a Pulaski Bridge. Half the time, the drawbridge is up. Letting boats through. Let me tell you, when Amazon's in, the drawbridge is always going to be up. The Amazon boats are going to be steaming in and out like a new fucking Navy. In and out of the Newtown Creek. Let me tell you something. Before this deal with Amazon.com, Long Island City was a waste zone. It looked like a Mad Max waste zone. Empty warehouses, pimps, prostitutes, Court Square Diner, people vomiting tuna outside of the Court Square Diner. You had a place called the Creek and the Cave in Long Island City. What a dump. First of all, tell me, what does somebody need at both the Creek and the Cave for? That's a danger to the water table, if you ask me. We have tried everything to push that place out of business. And I think finally, hopefully, Amazon and Bezos are going to help me knock them down. You're going to walk down Long Island City and immediately be snapped up by a drone that says, "Buy something, fuckface." And if you don't, you're not going to see your family again.
Do you think that this Amazon HQ and your role in bringing it to New York will be a major feather in your cap when it comes time?
I think it's going to be a major motion picture. I think Leonardo DiCaprio is going to play the part of Andrew M. Cuomo. He needs, frankly, plastic surgery to make himself look handsome and big-cocked enough to pull the part off.
I'd like to thank you once again, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, real New York guy, real one of us.
Hey, Chapo, look over your shoulder. We got El Chapo. He's in the court right now. We're coming after his trap house next. Look over your shoulder, asshole.
Do you think maybe there's a deal to be made to bring the Sinaloa cartel to another, like maybe Bushwick or East New York?
What I'm telling you is that your podcast has gotten away for a long time. We're going to start having regulations that come down on you. Hey, pretty nice podcast. Be a real shame if somebody said that your pipes were out of order.
It'd be a shame if something happened to this podcast. It's certainly true.
Yeah, the Department of Podcast and Amazon Inspections. Look for it. That's next.
Governor Cuomo, thanks again for giving us some of your time.
Welcome, my son. Welcome to the Machine. Yeah.
Governor Cuomo, thank you.
Yeah, fuck you.
All right. Thanks again to New York Governor Andrew Cuomo for stopping in and letting us know about all the fun things that Amazon is going to bring to Long Island City and, by extension, the state. So, as you might be aware, in a little bit, we are going to hear from you, the listener, in another pre-recorded call-in show. We're interested in hearing from you, what's on your mind, and just what's going on, and are definitely not interested in just, you know, cheap comedy material. I don't want you to get that impression. But before we get to that, I think we got to talk a little business. I think we got to check in with something that's come across the news transom that I think y'all are probably going to want to hear about. So let me begin by asking my co-host, let me sketch a scenario for you. Imagine, if you will, that you are a teenage boy. You have unrestricted access to the internet. Let's say you're sitting in the family den looking at the laptop or home PC, and you're on the internet. Let's say you want to look at a photo of Kate Upton because, you know, she's hot, and apparently your cousins had sex with her, and you're interested in, you know, what that's like. You're looking at a picture of Kate Upton. Let's say you click a little bit more. You're interested in what her boobs look like. Maybe you can't find pictures of her boobs, but maybe there are pictures of boobs out there. In fact, there are for sure pictures of boobs out there. Now you're looking at them. Now you're cruising. You've got a taste for it, though. Let's say you click just a few more times. Let's say now you're watching pornography. You're watching two human adults have sex with one another. You keep clicking. The algorithm has taken control of you now. You're seeing lesbian stuff. You're seeing penetration. You're seeing double penetration. You're seeing ropes. You're seeing epic compilations of ropes. You're seeing it all. But let's say you just keep clicking. Let's say within just a few clicks from seeing a glorious Peter North rope compilation, let's say you're watching forced feminization and hypnosis pornography, and you yourself are beginning to become hypnotized and sissified in just basically 10 minutes from getting interested in seeing Kate Upton's boobs. Imagine you're that child.
Fellas, don't you hate it when you're searching old relics and Catholic enchantments to get the demon out of your wife, and by the end of the afternoon, you've turned into a bimbo through your computer?
Fellas, don't you hate when that happens? And of course, someone who hates when that happens more than anything is Brother Rod Dreher, friend of the show. When last we checked on Rod, live on stage at Mr. Small's in Pittsburgh, we were checking in on the amazing story of his friend's wife and her upcoming exorcism, or rather her ongoing demonic possession was really the nut of that story. But Rod is back today with another one that I think he's outdone himself on. Headline simply, have you heard of sissy porn? Some people think there's a transgender connection. Maybe you don't want to know.
The headline alone was enough to really grip me because it's just the equivalent of showing somebody your browser history and being like, yo, have you seen this shit? It's fucked. Yo, this shit's weird. Those appear to be the only websites you've ever visited. Yeah, I know. It's fucking weird.
When I saw that headline from the American Conservative, I was like, don't need any more coffee this morning. Definitely logged in for the day. So Rod is, of course, responding to that big piece in the New York Times by Andrea Long Chu that a lot of people like, a lot of people are mad at. I'm not going to go into that now, but I'm really more interested in what Rod has to say about it all. And basically, he does the thing he does where he holds a flashlight under his chin as he's writing, and he's like, readers, I cannot warn you in the strongest terms possible. I cannot warn you enough to avoid the incredibly explicit content that I'm now going to describe in full detail, which he does go on to do. And Rod has discovered something called hypnoporn, or sissification, or bimboification, if you will.
Sorry, one second. I lost my place.
Will has been bimbofied momentarily. We would appreciate
it. He's too stupid to operate a computer.
Okay, so
he can't get around his giant boobs.
Yeah, his big boobs are hitting the keyboard.
Oh my. Okay, so he discovers a genre of porn called forced feminization through Andrea Chu, who wrote in an old paper or something. She describes this phenomenon.
Yeah, I like how there was this big article with like a big controversy that Rod like. It was easy for social conservatives to get into it and, like, just, you know, do a bad faith reading of Chu's article and be like, yo, trans people are fucking weird. But Rod showing that he's not, like, just a no talent, like, fucking Eric Erickson is like, hold up, give me a second. And like looks for an old Andrea Long Chew essay. And he's like, okay, bimbofication, give me that. That's what I want to talk about.
Yeah, that's what makes him the best.
Yeah, he did his work. It said on Chew's website, he posts a PDF link. That's I'm reading Rod here. He's intentionally misgendering this person. But they post a PDF link to a paper they delivered this year at Columbia University Conference. And so he's literally reading college papers from Andrea Chew.
He is the best.
The paper's title comes from a comment Chew saw in an online forum. Sissy porn, we learned from the paper, is a genre in which submissive men are forced to have sex with other men in such a way that their masculinity is forcibly taken from them. Chew says this genre is also called forced feminization porn. Chew says that sissy porn explicitly intends to turn male viewers into transsexuals, in part by instructing them to understand their addiction to the genre as constitutive of their own feminization. In the paper, Chew interviews one person who writes, "About 3 years ago, I discovered sissy hypno videos." That's hypno, like short for hypnotism, which in a nutshell are flashing subjective images telling you to wear panties, be girly, and even take hormones. I became completely obsessed with these videos. This is where Rod cuts in now. Now imagine a confused 12-year-old boy, perhaps one experiencing same-sex desires, finding sissy porn on his smartphone and giving himself over to it. It's only a few clicks away. Imagine that.
It's just a click away.
Dude, I don't want to think about these 12-year-olds becoming big busty bimbos, but I have to. It's my job. It's what this magazine pays me to do, to think about innocent children being turned into mincing bimbos by the computer.
Look, I'm missing the turnip harvest here at the compound because I have to write about the sexy bimbo 12-year-olds.
Now,
I don't want to think about a sixth grader becoming Dolly Parton in 9 to 5, but I have to. If I don't think about it, no one else will.
Of course, it wouldn't be a Rod column in which there wasn't a incredibly long reader email.
I bet they have a very like balanced view of the bimbofication sissy porn issue. You know, I've read a lot of demagoguery on both sides.
Well, I mean, again, like all of Rod's readers, they seem to have a very similar writing style and point of view to Rod.
I don't know. I think that's a little bit different. Every one of Rod's readers seems like Martin Scorsese in the back of the cab and Taxi Driver.
This is Rod's reader now. And he says, read this comment. Do you let your kid have a smartphone and or unsupervised internet access? You might want to rethink that.
Well, I mean, yes.
The reader,
Child's brain will be pudding in 10 minutes. Ask Felix.
I don't know, dude. I'm standing in front of you. I'm probably the member of the show least likely to be turned into a bimbo.
But the member of the show that most of our listeners want most turned into a bimbo, though.
Well, that's true, but I'd be like, it's interesting. It'd be easy to turn you guys into bimbos, but I'd probably be the sexiest bimbo. Like, if we're being honest.
I'm sure no one will attempt resolve that.
People have already drawn me as bimbos. They've already used face apps. It's fine, dude. The next step is just turning me into a bimbo, and honestly, new year, new me.
Okay, so this is Rod's reader email. The third update really struck a chord with me. I'm familiar with sissy porn, having discovered it in high school.
Uh-huh.
Dear Rod, I am taking my gun with the Old Testament etched into it out of my mouth to write you this.
And it's much broader than what Chew is referring to. Some background on me. I am a millennial, I was raised Catholic, and I first discovered internet porn at a friend's house when I was 12 years old. When I was in high school and we first got internet access at home, I used it to look for porn when no one was around. In the first few years, I had pretty typical straight teenage boy interests when it came to porn. Having been poorly formed in male-female dynamics, however, I was very interested in having power over women, and this led me to search for hypnosis. Since this was a very small niche back then, I absorbed whatever material I could find within a few months. This led me to the site of a woman who specialized in hypnotizing men and making them think they were women. Although the latter part just seemed gross, as I had no interest in being a woman, something about the power exchange appealed to me, even though it never did before. I have a theory that this is a pattern for frequent porn users. They may initially look for other things, but with enough exposure, they desire to become a passive sexual participant since it involves less effort on their part. He goes on for, he goes, despite the feminization aspect, I kept going down this rabbit hole as the thought of being the submissive one was appealing. So I did my best to avoid the sissy stuff at first, reading stories, downloading audios, and later watching videos where women claim to hypnotize men. Just a, you know, a PSA for the listener. You cannot be hypnotized into doing anything that you wouldn't otherwise already do. You can't change someone's fundamental moral core or identity through hypnosis. Just a, you know, just a warning there.
Yeah.
In case anyone tries to hypnotize you into commit a murder, if in fact you do it, you will be guilty of murder.
Yeah. And if the cop has to tell you that they're a cop or else.
Now, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I do believe that an individual was murdered here. But how could my client, who you see in front of you, who is a swaggering bimbo with heaving triple G with bosoms, have committed the murder when eyewitnesses describe a regular man as doing it? That's our new legal thriller we're writing with John Grisham. It's about a guy who gets out of a murder conviction by turning into a sexy bimbo.
Now I may be a sissified country lawyer.
Yes. Yep, it's going to be great. It's called Double D Jeopardy.
So it goes on. By the time I reached my 20s, I was in deep. Later in my 20s, I also discovered the free streaming porn sites, and I was eager to see what content I could find on them.
Mm, I bet you were.
The discovery of these videos led me to reflect on how big my problem had become. It goes on and on and on, and then he goes,
does he become a bimbo?
When
does he get to the bimbo factory?
Rod is reading this just with his dick out. He's like, oh my God, hurry up.
Get to the bimbofication.
Long story short, he never becomes bimbofied or trans, and he says it was because he returned to the Catholic Church, and now he has a wife and two children that he's very happy with.
Now I am a bimbo for God, Rod. Peace and salutations.
So basically, the main problem he points out is not enough porn about men hypnotizing women. If there'd been a broader array for him to choose from, he wouldn't have been forced to go down these perverted rabbit holes and find the other ones.
I mean, where this letter strains credulity is not that this guy found himself going down a rabbit hole and discovering some weird kink or sexual interest he wouldn't otherwise have discovered through pornography. What strains credulity is that he's like, but yeah, definitely. Then I got back with the Catholic Church, got a wife and two kids, and I'm normal now.
Totally normal.
Totally normal.
100% normal.
Yeah, I just jack off to normal shit, like women baking cookies, that type of thing.
Yeah, I bait to Norman Rockwell paintings nowadays.
He goes, I don't know who's making all of this stuff, but with all the videos and message board posts, there is an awful lot of content being produced that seems designed to reach lonely young men and recruit them into the ranks of the transsexual community.
Oh my God, guys, now that Tim Miller is no longer with Crooked Media, do you think Deciders is working on bimbofying young men? Or do you think Deciders can get to the bottom of it and figure out that Soros is bimbofying our military-aged men?
Oh, my God.
He closes by saying,
Tim, we need you.
I am fortunate that I rediscovered my faith in adulthood and got my act together. I have since married and am raising children with my wife.
And by two huge tits.
Who is not my wife, who has not been hypnotized in any way. It still haunts me to think how differently things may have gone for me, and I pray regularly for boys and young men who took the other path. The other path here becoming just like a huge sort of like serving Frau at an Oktoberfest, just wearing lederhosen with huge pigtails and just huge bosoms and freckled cheeks. And at least that's what I'm thinking about.
Dear Rod, I am now normal. I am now a member of Opus Dei who dug up his mom's skeleton and now worships it.
Rod closes by saying, of course he does. What is described here is the process of demonic possession.
I knew it.
Rod, you've used that one like a million.
Yeah,
that's
come
like
on.
He always, it sounds like I'm joking, but I'm not. Like, it's literally like, there are like 10 articles off the top of my head where Rod will see like, it's like, it just something like, it's like an online pop-up ad for like a mortgage, but there's a trans woman in it, and Rod's like, fucking demons, I told you. It's like, you can't always use that one. The first time you did it, I was like, wow, that's a new one, but like, you can't just say everything's demonic possession.
This is also just a retread horror movie plot from the early aughts. What if the devil was in the computer? That's all it is. Yeah. Movie called like evil.com or something.
Yeah, I mean, how about like a new one? Like, how about it's the book of Job, and God is like making individual prop bets with the devil over who will become a bimbo. Have you thought of that one? I'm just like workshopping here. It's not that I think you suck. I just think that you're phoning this one in.
I love the early seasons of Rod because the endings weren't always that predictable. It wasn't always a demon. Sometimes it would be a mummy. Sometimes it would be a Dracula. Sometimes even a Frankenstein. Now it's like demon, demon, demon. Is that what people want?
I keep seeing these toxic messages from Rod Dreher fans who are mad he's being recast as a bimbo.
Oh man, I'm just imagining like Rod for research watching all of the hypno porn.
Yeah.
Like fucking like the parallax view or something, except it's all just like
his breasts are just growing slowly as he watches it.
I think Rod needs to dedicate himself full time to fighting the trans hypno bimbo sissy porn menace. And by that I mean watch like every one of these videos that has ever been made just to prove that it doesn't work or that you can overcome the hypnosis.
And help produce a wider variety of straight porn so that guys don't end up going down these awful, crooked run roads. Instead, they can just stay on the nice fat runway of femdom and male dom and piss
pizza,
play.
Pizza delivery guys.
All the good classic meat and potatoes pornography.
Fucking your stepmom.
Yeah, of course.
Fucking your stepsister.
Hey, kids. You don't have to go outside and get hypnotized by some weirdo and turned into a woman. Just fuck your stepsister. She's right there.
So that is our check-in on the Rod Dreher universe.
Do you think like by the end of, I'm not going to be greedy and say by the end of 2018, but like by the end of 2019, we will have gotten like an overlap. There will be contact between Rod Dreher and Riley Reid. he will be petitioning Riley Reid to make normal porn for Catholic men.
She is a fan of Jordan Peterson. Maybe he could introduce them.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I there's so many like crossovers we never expected, and I feel like this is the next logical one. It's sort of like it's a screwball comedy, Rod and Riley Reid.
Can we
just
get
like
him on?
Rod becomes one of those reply guys to porn stars, and they're like, Rod, you have to understand, I don't know when my next bimboification video is coming out.
Can we just get him on a road trip maybe to AVN? You know, they got to get there. They're in New York. They got to get to Vegas in 3 days. I'd watch that.
Well, Godspeed, Rod. We're all praying for
Rod
you.
Godspeed.
And again, Rod, if you're listening, please update us on what happened with your friend's wife and her demonic possession.
Yeah, you can't just leave that out
like,
there. Be like, oh,
successful?
Yeah, having an exorcism at 3:30. You got to follow up.
Well, this is what I like about the Rod show is that it's similar to The Sopranos, right? Like, there are all these huge plot lines, and they just sort of, they never get tied up, and that's realistic. Like, things in real life, this is David Chase's finest work. Because sometimes there are just loose ends out there. Like, is that woman's demon okay? Is she okay? And this has become the dominant storyline of Rod season 6.
Friended by Rod.
Rod friended me.
Friended me, fuck.
You know how bad I wish I could even follow Rod? I can't.
Me either. It
sucks, dude.
Tone. You ever having a kid? You became sissified. Tone, it's all messed up. Terrible.
I could definitely see AJ getting bimbified, though.
All right. We can't dwell too long on Rod because, like I said, we need to hear from
you guys. Way too horny right now.
Yeah. I need to stop thinking about this or else I may think about it too much.
Yeah, I'm finna bust.
My fingers may start, typing into the old Google.
Bing is better for porn, just so everyone knows.
Thank you.
No. What's up?
Thank you, Bill Gates. All right. So as you may have seen, we now have a voicemail box that anyone can call to
abuse us.
Yeah, exactly.
We thought this would just make the abuse more efficient, just streamline the whole process.
And we're going to do a pre-taped call-in show. A lot of you guys called. Thank you to everyone who left us your thoughts and comments. We actually did listen to all of them, but unfortunately, we can't get to all of them. So Chris and I have curated a selection that I think you guys will enjoy, and I think we will enjoy. So why don't we get into hearing from you, the listener, in the Chapo suggestion box? Let's have a little Chapo suggestion box music. All right, you guys ready to take some calls? Some pre-recorded calls?
I'm ready. My body is ready.
Let's do it. Okay, first one.
Hi. Hi, I just wanted to ask the Chapo team, what's your favorite episode of This Is Us? This is specifically aimed at Felix, but I'd like to hear everyone's response.
Oh my, don't even get me started. I've watched every episode of This Is Us 3 times. You know, the fucking episode, remember when TJ and Sarah were like, oh no, we want to send our kid to camp, but we don't have the money because we gotta get our car fixed. And then Sarah happened to meet Craig at the coffee shop by random chance. And, you know, when Gavin came in the mix, I was like, this is us. This is everything we love about the show, This Is Us. And I mean, I can't really pick a favorite episode because every episode is just, it's us, man. That's what I love about it.
Hey,
we should call this show This Is Sus.
I like the episode where the Sterling K. Brown character has to tell the Milo Vente La Miglia character that he has non-celiac gluten allergy.
That was some us.
Yeah, this shit is us, though.
Yeah, damn. I'm smoking on that This Is Us.
You know, you guys are making fun of it, but it is the only hour-long show on network television that is not about a cop or a doctor. So,
Or a lawyer.
Mm-hmm. Those are usually cop lawyers.
Yeah.
So, you know, give it that, at least. I don't know what their jobs are. Looks like they all work at a Crate and Barrel together, but I don't know. I've never watched it.
They're bounty hunters, dude.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Every episode, they have to track down a new bounty head.
All right, never mind.
And then they say the catchphrase, "You're one of us now." In the prison system.
That sounds pretty good.
I like the one that's just an hour-long silent video of American war crimes. Your body's piling up with the caption, "This is U.S.
that really was the best episode. All right, next question.
Hey there, Chapo. I was just wondering, now that Kanye has cut ties and returned to the Democrat plantation, who is the next influencer that you would really want to see have a meeting of the minds with Trump?
Good question. I mean, the easy answer for me is, of course, Steven Seagal. And the most realistic level of, highest level of possibility of it actually happening, like, good chance it may happen before the end of 2019.
Well, he's already pro-Trump. That's not a question. Yeah. He just has to meet him. Wasn't there going to be a meeting because he's now the Russian at-large cultural ambassador?
He is. So there's a good chance that will actually happen. However, in the spirit of this question, I'd like to, like, that's kind of an easy answer. So is there someone on the level of, like, Kanye's level of influence or fame that you think would make for an amazing meeting of the minds?
Yeah,
I got one.
Okay. Alex Trebek, because the Cheeto in Chief needs to get a clue.
Oh, yeah. Donald Trump, you're not going to win any money, but with Robert Mueller, you are in jeopardy. I do have one that I think it's not on quite on Kanye's level, not yet. People haven't caught on quite yet to that level. But I think it's realistic, and I think that it would be an interesting synergy of brain types. And, of course, I'm referring to Jax Taylor of the Vanderpump Rules.
Yes, yes. I co-sign that entirely.
Jax Taylor has, like, the most powerful dumb guy aura I've ever seen, probably. And I don't, it's like, your initial thought is like, oh, Trump would love him. But it's like, I don't know. Because Jax is also, like, such a worm. Like, he loves starting shit.
He loves gossip. He lives for drama. But I think the important feature of Jax Taylor as a character and, like, you know, Trump supplicant or equal is the thing that makes him an amazing character, an actual real human being, is that he triumphs in spite of all of his terrible failings and shortcomings as a person. Mm-hmm. And he actually triumphs because of them for some weird reason. He just sort of thinks that admitting to all of his worst behavior and being like, yeah, I own it, I'm a bad person, is the same thing as, like, apologizing for it or getting better. But it works for him, and so much that it kind of actually does make you a better person. If you're just like, yeah, I'm fucked up, I tell everyone I know, I lie, I cheat, I fuck them over, that's me. But it's like, it's true, and we still love you, Jax. And Trump has some of the same energy.
Yeah, when Jax did the coolest, which made me a fan of Vanderpump Rules, when he did this,
when he ratted out his best friend for cheating like years ago, and the guy was like, I don't know why Jax would do this. He's my best friend. And Jax in his interview is like, yeah, friend is kind of a stretch. He's just so powerful.
My favorite Jax Taylor moment was, I forget what season it is in, but he tries to slip a confession by his girlfriend by saying, like, he's like, hey, baby, you remember when we talked about that time that girl was in my hotel bathroom in Vegas for a little bit, but like nothing happened and you were okay with that. You remember that, right? And she was like, no. And he was like, yeah, we talked about it and you said you were okay with it. You remember that? It didn't work, but I just so appreciate like the audacity to try something like that.
It's just a once in a lifetime type brain, and I feel like him and Trump would initially get along, and then he would do something to Donald Trump. He would like tell Melania that Donald Trump chased around Stassi in his underwear or something. And he'd be like, yeah, we've never been friends. So maybe Jax is like the only way we can actually take down Donald Trump.
Matt, do you have any celebs you'd like Trump to meet?
I just think just from a poetic literary sense, it would be very fitting if in a sort of Nietzschean becoming what you have beheld, staring into the abyss moment, Alec Baldwin switched sides. And just he spent so much time being Trump that he becomes radically empathetic to him and then decides that he's actually good and right and smart and everyone is being too unfair to him. Mm.
Talk about circling back to being bimbo-fied.
Okay, next question.
Hey, Chapo Trap House. First time, long time. This is Connor from Chicago calling. I just wanted to get Matt's thoughts on the NFC North this season. All right, thanks. I'll take my answer out there.
Matt, your thoughts on the NFC North this season?
I don't know. I haven't really been paying attention to football for a while because it's bad.
The way they disrespect the flag is disgusting.
Because football is fash. No, it's because the Packers suck, so why would I care? They're bad, and they're not going to make it.
Who's going to win the NFC North?
Bears, maybe?
The Vikings?
Maybe
I say the
Bears.
Vikings.
What difference does it make? They're all probably going to get destroyed by the Rams of all teams, hilariously. They're very good.
The official team of Blue Lives Matter.
Yeah.
All right, this one. All right, let's try this one on.
Hi, Chapo. I've noticed you sometimes treat the so-called identity politics wing of the left with suspicion. Do you guys think the goals of the economic justice left and identity politics left are in conflict? And how do you try to transcend your biases as a group of mostly white men? I'm including Amber in this since it seems like her views on gender politics are unorthodox.
Well, Amber's not here to answer your question, sir, so I cannot speak for her, but I will try to speak for myself. This is a semi-serious question. I think it's one that we get fairly frequently. Not unfairly, I don't think. I would say that, like, I think we've been pretty clear on the show that whatever the political goals of, shall we say, a class or material or economics-based left and one focused on things like race or gender or quote-unquote identity politics issues are not inherently in tension with one another, but they are certainly pitted against one another by shitty neoliberal hacks and politics and people who don't have a good faith investment in the success of the left in this country.
Right. I think this is often like a false dichotomy because they go, well, your choice is either like it's a New Deal Democrat or it's a shitty Democrat who makes some sort of like gesture towards identity politics while not actually doing anything or offering anything. And in fact, is in direct conflict with their 90% of their political history. And so, yeah, I refuse to accept that as a choice. It's not an either or.
Identity politics, as you know, is a term that defined as something you don't like. Much like the term neoliberal also means a thing you don't like. You see something you don't like and you say, that is identity politics to me.
Mm-hmm.
In that regard, frankly, I think that it's largely a waste of time to inveigh against identity politics. And what usually when people on the left are when people on the left are getting in a fit about identity politics, usually they are referring to some kind of weird internet distortion that is not a coherent political platform or philosophy. It's just a manifestation of the illness that in fact impacts your brain when you're on the internet, the illness that we all share and launder to you, the listener, every week on this fine program.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good answer. Do not confuse stuff you don't like on the internet with any coherent ideology. It's like maybe you just don't like the posts. That's always possible.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think we should be critical when one can't help but notice when things like, for instance, like forgiving all student loan will only help like rich white people or something like that, or when these supposed values of, you know, representation or things like that are being used in a cynical way that where of which the end result of it is just like, what do you actually want? Like just representation?
Yeah. Right.
Like that in and of itself.
The Sheryl Sandberg.
Yeah. Like,
right.
Like all of these things like are not meaningful without like actual political power or vision behind them. I mean, they can be, they just be these sort of these empty signifiers through which I think, quite frankly, shitty and dishonest politicians launder their amorality and, quite frankly, capitalist politics.
We got a pretty good example of that in this little chamber drama about Nancy Pelosi, which, you know, all of this is bullshit. It's just, she's just going to end up being the speaker, and this was all for naught. When the immediate response that I saw from a friend of the show, Joan Walsh, was to say that it was a committee of 9 white men trying to dethrone the speaker in waiting. And obviously, you know, that's cynical and that's bullshit. And there's very good reasons to be critical of Nancy Pelosi, even if those individuals, the ones who opposed Pelosi, were, you know, coming from the right.
As to the listener's final question about, you know, how do we feel as a group of mostly like white men responding to this? Like, you know, I think the end of the day is you have to be aware of your own biases and the things you bring to certain positions because of your own life experience and, you know, race and gender and class position within society. But genuinely, I don't take it too much into consideration, nor do I think it's something that has to be constantly wrestled or addressed with on the show, because at the end of the day, we're just talking, we're just friends, this is just our point of view. So, like, I mean, if the need to constantly adulterate that or you know, qualify everything you say based on who you are, I think is a little bit silly.
If I could venture a quick and dirty definition of identity politics, it's just a mode of political organizing centered around identity, whether that's race, nationality, disability status, gender identity, sexual identity, things of that nature. And that's not something I oppose. And I find it very difficult to oppose that or say that that is essentially opposed in opposition to the grander plan of erasing class in society. And especially when these are still groups that are marginalized in society. And you might say, you know, okay, well, that's, you know, that's just palliative. That's just treating a symptom. Symptoms are still things I'd like to see treated.
I don't really agree with that, honestly. I think that you can make a universal pitch and make an argument that a lot of the underlying problems that come from specific identity-based approaches to politics could be solved using universal programs and you know, the abolition of capitalism.
Yeah.
But that's different from the mode of the what it actually is in the world, and what it does is it creates these currents that by definition can't come together,
but they can't
because the people within a specific current are operating from the premise of the group that they want to represent. And that is going to mean that when it comes to creating policies, when it comes to figuring out what is going to be done, that it's all these guys, these different groups come into competition with each other. And that defeats universality.
I don't think it necessarily has to. And I don't believe that this mode of organizing is necessarily exclusionary. And without getting too far into it, I know there are examples from the past that show it isn't, whether it's creating large labor unions consisting of people of very different race, cultural backgrounds, or, I don't know, Jesse Jackson's Rainbow Coalition, or the way they organize laborers in, say, Hawaii, where you had individuals siloed off. They came from different countries, different ethnicities. they could organize along ethnic lines, but in a federation that won concessions.
Well, yeah, of course. I'm just warning that the people who are going to undermine broad-based class politics are not just cynical politicians or journalists. They're also people who, very well-meaning perhaps, but are essentially concerned more with questions of representation than they actually do care about the broader question of the allocation of resources. And that is going to be a thing that's very difficult to counteract, because how do you do it without appearing to be inconsiderate and insensitive to the real injustices that the groups have endured? And that's a challenge that I don't know the answer to, but it's a tension that I think has to be acknowledged. And saying that universal programs and the universal and labor-based politics sort of is and can be something that helps every group, that's true, but that doesn't abrogate the fact that in practice, this is a significant challenge to the building of that movement.
I think that's an interesting debate. As you can tell, we've not fully resolved these questions for ourselves.
We'll do it in the premium episode.
So we're not going to do it now. So let's move on. We've got to get to these questions. Let's keep them moving.
Hi, I was just wondering if I could get Catherine Kruger's email. Please and thank you. I'll take my answer after the beep.
Here is what you can get, sir. Sir, what you can get is a vigorous correction, you absolute imbecile and dullard. Catherine Kruger, you idiot. You just saw the fucking Nightmare on Elm Street movies, and you think it's Kruger. It's pronounced Krieger. Dunce. Blocked. Reported. You're done. You blew it.
Yeah, he blew a shot.
You blew it.
It's a...
Shut the fuck up.
He is never joining the polycule.
It's
now.
Virgil, Texas...
Shut up. Edit that out. Bleep that.
All right.
I got you, Will and Cap.
Next question.
Hi, Chapel. If you could choose one movie that you thought summed up the philosophy and experience of Chapo Trap House, what would you say it is? Also, I love Marty and all of the Chapo cats. Thank you.
Easy. The Garbage Pail Kill. The Garbage Pail Kids film.
For me, this is an interesting one because it's an opportunity to do a plug. For the film screening event we're doing at Lincoln Center on December 10th, we will be at the Lincoln Center Film Society is hosting us as we introduce and then do a discussion after the 1997 classic Starship Troopers, directed by Paul Verhoeven. A film and director, really a director that I think probably best captures the Chapo mindset.
Absolutely.
Of which Starship Troopers is but one facet. But you can go like, well, basically all of his American films, RoboCop, Total Recall, Basic Instinct, Showgirls, but definitely Starship Troopers. And I say that because Verhoeven is a director who more than almost anyone else has shown what the power of irony can do in even big budget Hollywood blockbuster filmmaking. In that he does these mega, big budget studio movies, a run of them in the 80s and 90s, that were hits and made within the studio system that essentially had a kind of dual meaning, and that they were incredibly fun, gory, nasty, shoot 'em up action movies and sort of sex thrillers that all at the same time were deeply subversive and each in their own ways about how just sort of cheap, crass, and awful and fascist American culture is. And he has a way of underscoring with brutal violence, like over-the-top brutal violence, the kind of cheapness and grotesquerie of human life.
Now, I want to note that's at the Lincoln Center on December 10th. And if you don't want to hear the panel discussion, you can just come and watch the movie and then leave. It's a movie theater. You can get popcorn, concessions, things like that. Also, if you just want a place to sit, you know, you could just get a ticket and sit in the theater. That's totally fine. Use the restroom. It's right there.
But what I mean with Starship Troopers and the irony thing is that he really shows that the best way to critique or subvert a right-wing point of view is to adopt it wholeheartedly, but take it to its most ridiculous extreme. is that it's much more effective, and this goes for chuds on the internet or Robert Heinlein, the author. The best way to make fun of their worldview or argue with them is to agree with them, mm-hmm. but agree with them in a ridiculous way.
And to show the logical conclusion of their beliefs, which is a really good society that we all want to live in. One that captures the brain bug.
One movie I think, I have two.
Okay, let's lay it on us.
One movie that I think like expertly detailed and sort of predicted a rise of a type of person, like a very underrated movie when it came out. 2009's Observe and Report.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. That's
very
a good,
good like proto-alt-right, authoritarian, yeah, very dark movie. But yeah, no, I think that sums up like a type of guy that we talk about quite a bit.
Just somebody fuming in the dead, like soul-crushing exurbs, just living amongst like the Cheesecake Factories and just getting pissed.
And there's another movie that very bravely, very directly confronts the issue of imperialism and actually glorifies those who rise up against the U.S. military in their bloodthirsty pursuit of resources. It creates a magical world that makes us fall in love, even teaches us a new language. Even, some say, teaches a new standard of beauty. It was so powerful that people wanted to kill themselves to live in this world. I am speaking of James Cameron's Avatar. Hmm.
I would say it's the Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, because essentially what our show is a struggle for affirmation and memory against the desire to forget.
Also, critical film in the hot couch genre. This is the only movie to successfully portray the camping trip that hot couch guys actually do end up going on. A Field in England by Ben Wheatley.
A Field in England is an amazing movie.
I fucking love that movie
and
so much.
All of Ben Wheatley's films.
Ben Wheatley's a god.
Are Chapo confirmed, stamped, and approved?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you want to, if I was going to pick a Wheatley for Chapo, I would say maybe Sightseers. Just another of a guy being like totally talentless, but convinced of his own genius and taking it out on everyone else.
And eventually, he turns violent.
Yeah. But no, I think of one movie only, and it's a movie that asks you one simple question. Do you take the red pill or the blue pill? That's right. Motherfucking Matrix.
Yeah.
I thought it was Censored, the film by Mike Cernovich.
All you guys out there, you know, you think you're alone, but you follow the white rabbit, and you are exactly like Neil from the Matrix.
All right, let's go to the next question.
Hey, Chapheads, this is Al from Dor Steindorf, first time, long time. I just wanted to ask you guys, what is the difference in your hatred levels between the worst Democrat, say like Chuck Schumer, and the quote-unquote best Republican, maybe Lisa Murkowski type? I'll take my answer off air. Thanks. Go Eagles.
What do you say, go Eagles?
Yeah.
Okay. It's clearly a violent individual dealing with here.
Sports ball fan.
This is a very good question, though.
I just remembered a movie I forgot.
Okay, we'll get to the movie.
Dead Presidents. Just see that one. It's a great fucking movie.
Hughes Brothers. Classic.
Classic.
Okay, back to the question at hand. This is a good question. What is the difference in our hatred and disgust for the worst Democrat versus, quote-unquote, the best Republican?
Oh, jeez.
Is there any difference at all, or do you actually hate Chuck Schumer more because he's ostensibly supposed to represent something better than what the Republican Party stands
for? It's hard because it's really hard to draw a distinction between someone like Murkowski and Schumer. Though, I mean, if you want to say the worst Democrat, probably Manchin, who I would probably consider worse than Murkowski. Because at least Murkowski is, you know, she's not Jim Jeffords exactly, but she's somewhere in there. I mean, she voted against Kavanaugh, which, of course, Manchin voted for enthusiastically.
But what about like a guy like Chuck Schumer, who's like, I guess like if you lined him up on policies, is like more liberal than Joe Manchin is because he's from New York.
Yeah, I guess.
But like his actual influence on our government and politics, I would say, is worse.
I mean, here's the thing. I don't really think he is an effective minority leader. I don't really think it's easy for someone to impress their will upon this caucus. Harry Reid did it very well. I don't know if Harry Reid is that substantially different in terms of his political positions than Chuck Schumer. Frankly, I think he's just sort of a figurehead at this caucus that mostly does what it wants.
Yeah. And, you know, the final thought on this is, like, you know, imagine a really stupid guy who thinks minority leader is just the title you give to the most powerful Jew in America. And that's what I think.
Matt, what do you think about this?
I really hate them all.
That's really the answer.
Like, what is my personal feeling, like my emotional response to one of these people? What does it matter? It doesn't. So it's just, I don't have to regulate it or modulate it. It's just visceral, and I see them and I hate them. And
it's sort of like how many angels can dance on the head of a pin. Yeah. Like, how much do you hate Lisa Murkowski than Chuck Schumer?
Yeah,
or vice versa.
This is pretty futile. This is doing a hot or not on fucking Deb Fischer and Lisa Murkowski. What are we doing?
We all know that the hottest guy in the Senate is motherfucking Chuck Schumer. Just a fucking pog and a dime.
I actually have a strong feeling on this one. I think that you gotta hate the bad Dems more, because basically everyone with an R behind their name you can just write off as the enemy, no matter how reactionary they are, somewhat or very, just loyal foot soldiers to, like, transferring capital to the richest assholes ever. The bad Dems, we all have to, like, because of American electoral politics, live in this big tent with these people, and they are the ones who are just, you know, making real effective, you know, a counter party hard and impossible, and having to do all the shit that you referenced earlier with the two-step with Pelosi and the right-wing Dems in the House and all that bullshit. And that is so much more of an impediment to a clear path forward for progressive ideas that I find it immediately, viscerally much more detestable than the quote-unquote good R's, who we all know are also just bad as well.
Yeah, I sort of feel that one, like, the same way when it comes to pundits. Like really awful right-wing pundits I enjoy more than just, like, the craven, supercilious lib pundits who are also in their own ways very nasty. Like, they revolt me more than the right-wing chuds to a certain degree.
Because they at least pretend to be human.
I think our calculus, though, for pundits is different, because
I think
if you're just a person who sees these people here and there, you're obviously going to hate the right-wingers more, and I think that's the more rational response if you were just a regular consumer of media, because their views are more upfront monstrous. But if you have to look at these people constantly, I think it's remember what Tom Berenger says in Sniper? That he assigns these stories to people's lives that he watches through the scope, because it sort of eases the doldrums of being a sniper, which is what we are. And I think that if you read this long enough, the liberals, they kind of have all the same lives and internal monologues, and it's all very dull. But, you know, someone like, there is more madcap comedy and human error and buffoonishness in the lives of conservatives, and that you end up knowing more about them as people, and you find them obviously worse in belief but more interesting.
If you could, like, go into the heads of liberal pundits and hear their inner monologue, it's just fucking, you know, West Wing quotes and just like big speeches.
If you go into
the inner minds of conservative pundits, it's just jug band music, just an endless hootenanny.
Yeah, no, the liberal, you go into any liberal columnist we don't like, go into their head and it's like, huh, is it a pan quotidian type of day? And you go into the conservative's head, it's like, oh, God, is there any porn where a woman gets stuck in a barrel? Like, it's like, whoa, how did this guy get like this? I know how the liberal got like that. It's, you know, it would have been me if I was a better student.
Well, there's an exception, I think. I generally agree with that. Like, guy like Rod, I mean, yeah, his brain is just filled with galaxies that you want to explore.
But, it's a no man's sky. Yeah,
exactly. Rod is the seventh doctor.
Yeah, but there's one conservative pundit who is just as empty and blank and uninteresting as the liberal, and yet a million times more risible, and therefore I hate way more than any of them. And he reminded me today of why I do, because, as you might know, the U.S. Border Patrol fired a bunch of tear gas at men, women, and children trying to get into the country in Tijuana today. And a lot of Democrats and liberals got mad and said, this is awful. And a lot of Republicans and conservatives fell all over themselves to say it's not a big deal. One of whom, who posted a picture of some U.S. troops being exposed to tear gas as part of their boot camp, said, what's the big deal? This happens to our troops all the time. They volunteer for it. It's not a war crime. That, of course, being John Poderitz, a man who will call the cops if his seamless delivery of burger does not come with a little shot glass of fucking pan drippings that he asked for. This disgusting pig, this hog scum, this ball of entitlement who just throbs and expands like a tumor of privilege and an unearned position in society, who's never had any fucking adversity in his life more than like somebody at a cocktail party looking at their watch when he tried to talk to them, is going to tell a bunch of people who traveled 1,500 miles to avoid getting murdered by a drug gang and then got gassed by our government to fucking walk it off.
I'm imagining stuffing John Podhoretz in like a wardrobe with a fucking pulled pin on a tear gas canister and padlocking it.
John Podhoretz's punishment in hell should be he gets all the treats that he could ever desire. He's eternally hungry for them. Whenever he bites into one, just tear gas comes out of it. Please.
He's tweeting about it, but no one responds.
I mean, I think that's why I get happier when I see we're doing like John Podhoretz is a great example, because it's like, yeah, if it's a shitty liberal right, like their entire lives are this study of sort of public relations, dark magic and shit, and they won't reveal that much that's funny about themselves, or they know exactly how to portray themselves. But the conservatives are so, like, they're sheltered and encouraged in this way that they just put it all out there. Like, no one is telling John Podhoretz, like, You sound like Augustus Gloop on your Twitter. You sound like a more tyrannical version of Augustus Gloop. Stop it. Stop adding schnippers. Like, you look foolish. And so I think that they were told no fewer times. That I get to see more of who they are, and it's more exciting.
Well, I think Matt's onto something, because if we're talking about pundits, my hate level is absolutely the highest for the Never Trump conservatives. No question.
Yeah, 100%.
No question.
They embody the worst of both worlds, definitely.
Oh yeah, no, they
absolutely.
Yeah. They're just the one. Their base cowardice is revolting, because that's the defining characteristic of their entire lives, is cowardice.
So I think that's a good way to end this question. You know, hate whoever you want. You know, just let it just throw it all out there, but reserve the captain's reserve for Never Trump conservatives. That high proof shit. Because they are the worst of the worst.
Who all love the shit that went down in Tijuana. Every single one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next question.
Hello, it's Jesse, the voicemailer of Ventura. I'm wondering who has the wildest conspiracy theory of all the Chapos, and what the biggest fight between you over one of these theories has been.
Hmm, interesting.
Okay, so, like, I interpret that question, are there any conspiracy theories or something that in sort of our popular consciousness can be described as a conspiracy theory that you actually believe in?
I got a couple. Pretty sure that the FBI killed Martin Luther King.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I'm like 90% of Pizzagate is real. Like, everything but sort of the specifics that these people freak out about, like comic ping pong and all the dumb emails that they decipher. The premise of Pizzagate is correct.
Which is?
That the elite traffic and ritually abuse children as a part of, like, solidifying their bonds as part of the elite and as a way to sort of leverage one another to prevent them from breaking ranks.
But like John Podesta specifically?
No, not necessarily. He is a weirdo, though, and it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, nothing that Pizzagate has uncovered in terms of like evidence is real. But they fuck people. They fuck. I mean, Epstein. My God, the guy who has both the former president and wife of the 2016 Democratic candidate and the 2016 Republican candidate, both were on the flight logs of his sex ship that went to his private sex island, where we know for a fact they were abusing children. Like, why would we think that it would end there? Wouldn't we think that
I mean, if you looked at the flight logs of, say, someone like Warren Buffett over a 20-year period, I'm pretty sure it would be every member of the political class as well.
Yeah, but okay, are they going to the sex island? Because that's, I think, the most important question there. They're going to a underage sex island.
No, they're going to the underage sex Omaha steakhouse.
Just Google Franklin credit ring. I'm down with that one. And I mean, I don't think you can even call this conspiracy anymore. The CIA actually absolutely fucking sold cocaine in America in the 1980s.
Yeah, I would say that's hardly a conspiracy.
100%. 100%. I think that I would, if I were a betting man, I would say that the government killed Malcolm X using forces within NOI. I'm trying to go for a spicier one that I think is true, but beyond astrology is real, which I also believe.
The greatest conspiracy of all.
Yeah. You know, I think I've done my... I think I can't pinpoint exactly who killed JFK, but I think the mafia were the trigger men. Like, you got to go with that one.
Probably. I'm sort of more lukewarm on the JFK thing. I think the most credible JFK conspiracy theory is sketched out by Don DeLillo in Libra, in that the CIA was involved, but what they wanted, and they were using Oswald as a patsy because he would, you know, he defected to the Soviet Union. He was a Marxist. He was like a hands-off Cuba guy. But the CIA wanted to basically use him to stage an assassination attempt as an excuse to recommit to invading Cuba after the Bay of Pigs disaster. And they, like, you know, to get back at Kennedy for not, you know, sending in the Air Force or not fully committing to their plan for regime change in Cuba, that they wanted to stage, like, an assassination attempt by a known Marxist, you know, acolyte or defender of Fidel Castro, who's an American citizen, and then use that as a casus belli. But it sort of got out of their hands, and, you know, one of their trigger men was too good a shot or didn't get the memo. But to echo Matt, the one I absolutely do believe is that James Earl Ray was not even the shooter of Martin Luther King, but was a pure patsy, unlike Oswald, who I think definitely, at the very least, pulled the trigger from the book depository. Whether he was the only shooter, I don't know. I'm sort of like agnostic on that question, but I find the DeLillo scenario more believable than the other ones.
If Oswald pulled off that shot, that's the most poggers snipe of all time.
He was a Marine.
Using that... Marines suck, dude. So much of a better shot than any Marine. And that's no cap, dude.
Virgil, do you have any conspiracy you believe in?
No, I don't. I have normal beliefs, and I don't really agree with my colleagues on these, but I think that the quotidian evil in men's hearts and their machinations are sufficiently terrifying that I don't need any sort of conspiracy.
Oh, how about this, guys? Imagine a vast conspiracy pulled over your eyes every single day, but for kindness. No, more than that.
Next question. Next question.
There was a second shooter of a smile.
Please stop talking shit about pit bulls.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Okay,
man.
Okay. Wait, please stop being violent.
I'd like you to stop making fun of pit bulls. They're actually really sweet. It's the owners that are bad.
We had two calls about pit bulls.
I'm going to be honest, man. All the stuff about pit bulls, we're really just like making fun of the people whose only political issue is the demonization of pit bulls. They are very nice dogs. As they're, you know, Adam Friedland's dog, Icy, is just the sweetest pit bull.
Oh, okay.
They're, yeah.
Normally, it's always a bad move to explain jokes, but I wouldn't want people actually thinking that we're anti-pit bull.
No, we're not.
Pit bulls are wonderful, sweet dogs. As Felix said, Adam Friedland's dog, Icy, is like, she's like a lap dog in a big dog's body. You just sit down and she just tries to curl up in your lap, even though she weighs about 50 pounds. And they're darling. And yes, it is the people who make pit bulls bad. However, pit bulls as a species are basically engineered to have the potential to be remorseless child-eating and killing machines. So I'm just saying, just stay on alert, stand your ground, and if a pit bull is looking menacing at all, put it down with a crossbow bolt.
I mean,
100-yard rule.
I prefer the more exotic dogs, like a Borzoi, a Portuguese water dog.
Ooh, la-di-da.
Well, yeah, no, I think it's cool when dogs have jobs and they look cool. But
a pit bull's job is just annihilating
it's murder.
Children.
It's like RoboCop. That's why you guys like it. No, they're sweethearts. They're just, I mean, the real problem with pit bulls, most of them you meet, is that they like you too much and they don't realize how strong they are. And they just get all over you and they kill you. No, they're wonderful. I love them.
Okay, we've dispensed with that controversy. Okay, next question.
Hey, Chapos. This is President of China, Xi Jinping. I just wanted to thank you guys personally for your continued work to destroy the youth of America and prepare the U.S. as a whole for the Chinese invasion of the West Coast, which should be kicking off in the next 3 months. We're really excited for that. We want to help We want to get you guys helping in this cause. So we've gone ahead and we've sent a crate full of Type 56 AKs to the Park Slope Mansion. Hope you guys have fun with that. Anyway, I got to run. Thanks again, and long live socialism with the Chinese characteristics.
Wow, what a nice guy.
Dude, I've always said he's the sweet. He's a sweetheart. He's like a pit bull. He's like unfairly demonized.
He is the great helmsman of my heart.
I love him.
Well, all right. Dude, that's good.
I mean, you never know what'll happen when you do something like open up a voicemail box that anyone can call. Sometimes it may be the leader of China calling in to congratulate you on all the good work you're doing. And I say to him, to President Xi, buddy, we can smoke weed anytime you find yourself in Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah, we uphold your thought all the way.
Talk about a pep talk.
President Xi, I would love to smoke some weed with Kush characteristics with you.
Hell yeah.
I can't wait to do an unboxing video on those choppers. That's going to fucking rule.
Illegally Chinese manufactured AK unboxing video.
Hell yeah. President Xi, if you can tactically ascertain for me my favorite gun from the Battlefield series, the AN-94 rifle, a 2-round burst that has no recoil in the second burst. Yeah, I mean, if you can't get it, I understand you're a busy guy. If you can't, awesome.
All right, next question.
Hey, Chapo, this is Josh. I really like the Stavros episode where he had that great speech about dumb socialists. Do you have any more advice for all us dumb socialists out there? Thanks a lot.
Number one of them is stay away from internet socialism of all kinds. Because honestly, what you see there are people who have very specific views. A lot of them, frankly, kind of just want to show everyone how smart they are and have a mania for basically creating litmus tests because they view the left as a subculture. They're basically goths for politics, and they don't like posers. And as a result, they really aren't interested in getting any kind of mass movement. So ignore those insane people and just try to stick to meat space organizing with people, because if you're dealing, I find in my experiences that when people are dealing with, you know, actual questions of what do we do, like actual activism, a lot of these very sort of enervating theory questions sort of fall by the wayside, and people have, regardless of how much education they have some practical insights to contribute, and they can collaborate on a way forward.
To echo what Matt said, I think by 2018 now, having been extremely online and associated with the left for a few years now, I would say basically anyone who's online and seems to really, really care about or identify with a specific left-wing tendency and wants you to do the same or do otherwise based on who you are, should pretty much be written off. I think they're all cranks and weirdos and should pretty much be ignored. But for the larger question, I think you just shouldn't be afraid of being stupid, or not being stupid, or just not, you know. Rob Wiseman had a really great infographic he did about this very question, about being a dumb guy, that was just like basically laid out, have I read the tax code? No, neither have you. But guess what? Rich people should still pay more of it. Like, you know, like could I explain to you how single payer works? No. But if you get sick, you shouldn't be bankrupted by it. Or like, you know, that should be provided for you, but it should be a basic standard of decency and care in a rich society. You don't need to be a wonk or a fucking genius or someone who was like, you know, raised a million posts. Yeah, exactly. Or the type of kid who, you know, brought a briefcase to school and wanted to be a wonk and likes to be like, well, you don't really know what you're talking about. Where are the details? Where are the graphs? To understand basic moral and political truths that are self-evident to anyone with half a functioning brain.
And more importantly, then taking that belief and putting it to practical use.
All right. Pretty good answer. Next question.
Hey, what's up? Just wanted to say, I don't know, you guys are really cool, and it's just kind of neat to, like, have, like, funny, interesting people who, like, aren't transphobic. It's a really rare thing, and you guys have been that from day one, so good on you.
Really more of a comment than a question. I wish you'd made that more clear starting out. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you very much for the kind thoughts. We did get a lot of just general notes of encouragement from listeners such as you. And while playing them all would seem self-indulgent, I do want to thank you for calling in and saying that you like the show and you think we're cool and funny. Okay, next question.
The notion that socialism has not existed in the West is a lie. The Francis Perkins Act, 1935, National Labor Relations Act, Title 29, Chapter 7, Subchapter 2, United States Code, is literally socialism. and the Corporation Excise Tax Act has a labor organization in Section 501c3 and 501c5 of the U.S. Tax Code and have these features. An association of workers who have combined to protect or promote the interests of the members by bargaining collectively with their employers to secure better working conditions, wages, and similar benefits. Those bullet points are pure socialism. Socialism exists in title and action within the U.S. and bolsters the country and should be a part of the U.S. civics education.
No, thanks, man. You demand.
that was a good question. I agree with what that person just said. Let's just go to the next one, though.
The Francis Perkins-backed 1935 National Labor Relations Act, titled 29, Chapter 7, Subchapter 2, United States Code, is literally socialism, and the Corporation Excise Tax Act has a labor organization in Section 501c3, 501c5 of the U.S. Tax Code and have these features. Association of workers who have combined to protect or promote the interests of the members by bargaining collectively with their employees to secure better working conditions, wages, and similar benefits. That's pure socialism. It's existed in title and action in the U.S. and bolsters this country. It should be taught in the U.S. civics, please.
That's amazing. Two guys.
Wow.
Very
wow.
Similar things to say.
I joined his call in teaching that U.S. civics.
Well, first of all, he's wrong. That's not socialism. That's a union. That's not the same thing. The owners are a separate class from the employees. That's not socialism.
I think that guy's right.
It's socialism when the owners have actual control of the company, not when they bargain with the ownership.
I just want to say thanks for your kind words. We do have fun doing the show to answer your question.
Can I respond to him with Michael's replies to bodybuilder likes in real life?
Sure.
On Instagram. Damn, you're thicker than a Stephen King book. I'd love for you to knock me out with a good slap to the head. You look like some fucking Hawaiian rolls, man. Completely freaking awesome. Totally great. Look like real life Baywanch.
Anyway,
right, it's so good. Michael's the best.
I've another one. This is sort of a nice thoughts call, but I want to play it because it has sort of an international flavor.
Hey everyone, this is one of the hogs. I'm a big fan from Morocco, and I just wanted to squeal about if you could have any more cool international guests, because we have not had those in a while in your America. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Did he say he was from Monaco or Morocco?
Morocco.
That makes more sense.
he's a prince. He's like a guy who does intrigue with James Bond.
He's a high stakes gambler or Formula One race car.
I'm calling
driver.
You from the baccarat table, Chapo.
I'm one of the right. I'm the head of Monaco's Communist Party. There's one of us. And
I'm glad he said that because I can now announce that we are going to have a. It was going to be a surprise, but I'm going to tell it. Jair Bolsonaro, we're having him next week. He's going to be in the studio. We're very excited.
All my favorite fighters support him. He's the man.
We've had plenty of great foreign guests. A China Mieville.
Again, always, and to me, heartening and somewhat shocking to find out we have listeners in a place like Morocco, but super cool. And again, if you have good ideas for international guests, send them to the voicemail.
Yeah,
we'll try to have maybe we'll do like a trip around the globe episode where we read you facts from an almanac and teach you some things about the world. No, but seriously, more international guests would be great, and love hearing from fans all over the world.
Yeah, and to that listener, pour back a cup of that Berber whiskey for us, and anyone but Europeans, I'm down to have on. Anyone but that hideous, hideous continent.
All right, and one final one. Let's see what this is.
Hey, Chapo. This is the Grey Wolf in Decatur, Illinois. I just want to let you know that thanks to your show, I threw my college degree in the trash and became a freight train conductor here. So you have that going, and it's something that will make me laugh for the rest of my life. So congrats, and just letting you know the Grey Wolves are infiltrating the freight rails. So yeah, bye.
Decatur, that is, it's a place I haven't thought of in a while. But we need those Amtrak and Metro conductors in Illinois. Thank you.
I just think that sums it up. If you're listening to the show, drop out of college if you haven't done so already. Throw that degree in the trash and become a train conductor.
It's easy. You just see one of them going by and you run, you run, pick up some speed and you hop on. Yep. Work your way up.
Yep. You got a cool hat.
We're looking into changing the rules where you can only become a train conductor if you kill the previous one. We think that's a high barrier to entry. Some of those guys are pretty good at fighting. Remember, they killed the last one to get in that position, and they've presumably killed all other challengers. So we will be looking to change that.
The one downside of being a conductor is that eventually you will meet Joe Biden. It's just inevitable.
Ugh. Or John Kasich.
Oh, God.
Well, if you meet Joe Biden, you'll probably be serving him a drink on the dining car. If you meet John Kasich, you'll be stoving his head in with a rail tie as you toss him out of a boxcar going over a bridge that connects two parts of a mountain.
Yes.
That about does it for the pre-recorded call-in show. I will leave you with this, the one final call that sums it all up. We'd like to do some more of these pre-recorded call-ins. Keep that number in mind. The voicemail box is up in perpetuity. So drop by and give us a piece of your mind, especially if you're angry at us.
Oh, one last thing. So you can't get mad at us. It is Jair Bolsonaro. Hard J.
I said that, didn't I?
I know. If in case they try to correct you.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're stupid pigs.
I'm actually more looking forward to your phrase pan quotidian.
Oh yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, I'm a pan quotidian type of brother.
All right, guys. Till next time.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.